House Committee on Health Care to order on this 10th day of March in the year 2017. We're going to do a couple of work sessions. We have three work sessions scheduled today. We have the paperwork on two of them, and we hope to have the third one before the end of the day, the end of our day. Now, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2340.
No,
that's the wrong one.
Yep. That's
2660, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, let's open a work session on House Bill 2660. Madam Administrator, what do we got?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2660 comes to us at the request of Representative Bynum. This is the bill that had a public hearing on February 20th. It requires the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Business and Consumer Services to collaborate on the creation and implementation of a campaign to educate breast cancer patients about the insurance coverage for breast reconstruction and breast prosthesis. Mr. Chair, we have a -3 amendment. The amendment basically replaces the original measure by directing the Oregon Health Authority and Department of Consumer and Business Services to make education and materials available on the website relating to breast cancer insurance coverage and breast reconstruction options. It specifies that the website is to be updated annually, and it also identifies items to be contained on that website. Mr. Chair, with the -3 amendments, we have a no revenue and we have a minimal fiscal impact on the bill if the committee chooses to adopt the -3 amendments.
So we do the -3, we still have to send it to Ways and Means?
No, Mr. Chair. If we adopt the -3 amendments, it takes the fiscal off of the bill, leaving it at a minimal expense, and we have given notification to the Speaker's office, and you do have approval if the committee so chooses to rescind that referral.
Well, I hope we so choose. Do I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the -3 amendments to House Bill 2660, dated March 1st, 2017.
Mr. Notes moves the -3 amendments to House Bill 2660. They be added to the bill. Is there any discussion on the motion to amend? Any objection? So moved.
You want another motion?
Please.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2660 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Nose moves House Bill 2660 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
That's the first time I've ever made that motion.
That's a good motion. That's an excellent motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Excuse.
Representative Bueller.
Yes.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Aye.
Representative Kenimer.
Aye.
Representative Maelstrom.
Aye.
Representative Hack.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Nose.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hayden.
Aye.
Chair Greenman.
All right, the motion carries. You said it was Bynum.
Yes, Representative Bynum would like
Representative Bynum will carry it on the floor. Close the work session on House Bill 2660 and open up a work session on House Bill 2723. Madam Administrator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2723 had a public hearing on February 13th. This is the bill that adds hippotherapy to the types of health care and services that are provided by recipients of medical assistance. It has an emergency clause effective on passage. Mr. Chair, what you have before you is the -3 amendment, which replaces the measure and directs the Health Evidence Review Commission to review the therapeutic and clinical effectiveness and cost-effectiveness of hippotherapy and make a recommendation to the legislature on including hippotherapy in their scope of work.
Does it have a subsequent referral?
No, Mr. Chair, and the revenue is a no revenue impact, and the fiscal, it also with the -3 amendment is minimal.
We have a motion, please.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the -3 amendments dated March 7th, 2017 to House Bill 2723.
Representative Nose moves the Dash 3 amendments dated March 7, 2017 to House Bill 2723. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection? So moved. Representative Nose.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House Bill 2723 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves House Bill 2723 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? That was the amendment?
It was the bill.
Okay. Yay. Any discussion on the bill?
You need to reopen the work session, Mr. Chair.
I didn't close the work session.
You dropped the gavel.
I dropped the gavel, but it was just loose in my hand. It was a heavy burden.
It was sleight of hand.
Reopen the work session. Please call the roll.
It's a Freudian slip, I think, really.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Excuse.
Representative Buehler.
Yes.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Aye.
Representative Kenner.
Aye.
Representative Maelstrom.
Aye.
Representative Hack.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Nose.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hayden.
Aye.
Chair Greenlick.
Aye. The motion carries. Representative Solman will carry this.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
And I will close the work session on House Bill 2723. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2128. Madam Minister, what do we have?
Well, I'm going to give you the brief summary, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2128 is before the committee today at the request of Representative Post. It deletes the requirement that a pseudoephedrine be classified as a Schedule 3 controlled substance. And Representative Post will present to the committee.
Please have at it.
Good morning, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee. I'm Bill Post. I represent House District 25, which is Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburg. I just realized this is only the third time I've sat in front of a committee like this, and it's not getting any easier. It's still a little weird. So I thank you for your time. I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk about House Bill 2128-1. If you hadn't noticed, there is a very important -1 amendment that is really the guts of this bill. As you know, it rains in Oregon. As a kid once said to me, it doesn't just rain, it pollinates in Oregon. And we seem to be the capital of hay fever, colds, and all that goes with it. And while pseudoephedrine products, and in this case, my bill has been affectionately called the Sudafed bill, Sudafed doesn't cure anything, it sure makes you feel a lot better. It makes life a lot easier. And I've heard from Oregonians all over the state about the desire to bring pseudoephedrine products back in a more responsible way. And in fact, on your oldest, you can see many emails that we uploaded. Those are just a few. Most of them are from the Portland area because at this point they're frustrated enough to just go across the border into Washington. Today you're going to hear that bringing back Sudafed through this bill will return us to the days of meth labs with trailers and starving children. And unfortunately, the data shows that while meth lab use has gone down in Oregon, though that decline started before Sudafed was restricted, the use of meth has gone up because it's no longer being made in a lab in somebody's backyard. It's being brought over the border in pure liquid form. I'll be walking you through a presentation which combines two studies. They're both studies are available to you separately on OLIS, the NAMSTOL study and the NASCA study, which I'll define for you. The NAMSTOL is the National Alliance for Model State Drug Laws, and the other is, get that real quick, is the I've combined these two reports to make it a little easier, but again, you can read them separately. Is the National Association of State Controlled Substance Authorities. So if you want to follow along, it's on the screen there, and I'm not going to read everything. I'm just going to touch on some things. In July of 2006, Oregon became the first state to require a prescription for products containing pseudoephedrine and ephedrine, such as cold and allergy medications. Mississippi implemented a similar law in 2010. Both states experienced substantial reductions in the number of meth lab seizures. In Oregon, the number of meth-related labs deaths has been increasing since 2007, with numbers reaching their highest levels in 2014. Meth has now surpassed heroin as the leading drug-causing death in the state. The research team concluded that the relationship between the PSC prescription laws and the decline in meth lab incidents is spurious for the following reasons. Similar decreases in the number of meth lab incidents occurred in surrounding states for both Oregon and Mississippi, suggesting a regional trend as opposed to a unique event in each of the two states' cases. Law enforcement agencies in Oregon and Mississippi report that meth supply has remained plentiful throughout the study period, with meth imported from Mexico making up for any lost domestic meth production. Mexican drug traffickers may have contributed to the decline in meth labs in both Mississippi and Oregon and surrounding states, as they were able to provide ample supply of equal or greater quality meth at competitive prices. Since 2010, over 100 bills have been filed in 27 states with prescription-only provisions, yet Oregon and Mississippi remain the only two states with the prescription-only mandate. Electronic tracking and block of sales to those exceeding quantity limits is the most common approach states are using, with 32 states having taken this step to regulate access to PSE. Recently, you may have read in the news, Multnomah County's biggest drug bust ever, February 23rd, 2017, about 100 pounds of meth, highlights a new trend in this drug trafficking. Inside the home, agents discovered several more pounds of crystal meth, as well as canisters containing liquid pseudoephedrine, which is what meth is made from now, liquid pseudoephedrine that's converted into crystal meth. The bust shows that the latest trends in Mexican drug cartels are using to avoid detection. Fascinating, this was. They're bringing the liquid pseudoephedrine in gas tanks, car batteries, and windshield wiper fluid compartments into the U.S., where it is then converted into crystal meth or ice once it reaches the state or city of distribution. Law enforcement officials in Oregon note that in every meth lab incident that has occurred since the prescription-only law was implemented, where the source of PSE, pseudoephedrine, could be traced, the PSE originated from one of the four surrounding states. That came from the GAO in 2013. For both Oregon and Mississippi, not only did the number of lab incidents in those states drop after the law's implementation, lab incidents declined in surrounding states as well. The same basic lab incidents trends occurred in Mississippi's surrounding states. With the exception of Tennessee, all states experienced at least an 85% reduction in the number of lab incidents between 2004 and 2014. This is a little bit of a graph. I hope you can see that okay. What's interesting about it is there was a 99% decrease in lab incidents from 2004 to 2014. But what's fascinating about this chart is there were 632 lab incidents in 2004, 2 years before the law was implemented. The very next year, before the law was implemented, it dropped to 232. And before the law went into place in 2006, dropped down to 66. So it was already dropping before this law became, before this bill became law. The reduction in lab incidents occurred in all states bordering Oregon, Washington, California, Idaho, and Nevada. All five states experienced at least a 95% decrease in the number of meth lab incidents throughout the 2004-2014 period. And you can see that line that shows where the law came in, the prescription law enacted, and you can see that it was already dropping before that. We had done a good job by putting it behind the counter. Law enforcement identifies Mexico is the primary source of Oregon's meth, with a small amount being produced in California and the Southwest. The report also mentions the number of meth seizures and pounds of meth seized has increased substantially since 2007, the year after the law came into effect. In 2010, forces seized 157 pounds of meth, but this number tripled to 578 pounds in 2014. Not only is crystal meth from Mexico, California, and Texas a problem, law enforcement still encounters domestic meth produced via the one-pot or shake-and-bake methods, but what they've found is that's usually for personal consumption. It's not being massively sold. The authors of the NASCA report that I'm referring to found no evidence of changes in methamphetamine consumption or arrest for drug possession, suggesting external sources of supply over national borders. The authors also found no significant impact for Oregon's regulation, as seizures there, here in Oregon, and nearby western states had largely bottomed out months before the regulation was implemented. Given that demand for meth changes very little with price, the authors suggest that their failure to find evidence for higher prices suggests that the disruptive effects of prescription-only legislation on meth availability is quite small. This may likely be due to international imports being readily available to displace domestic producers. The authors concluded that while prescription-only laws can reduce the number of domestic small methamphetamine labs in operation, methamphetamine availability is unlikely to be materially impacted. And while the authors acknowledge that a prescription-only requirement would likely reduce PSE purchase for illicit use and curb methamphetamine production and costs, their model indicated that a prescription-only policy would result in new physician visits and significant increases in out-of-pocket patient costs as well as public and private payer costs. Now, my solution to this, not my solution, I wish it was, is NPLEX. It's provided free of charge on a permanent basis to state governments that pass appropriate legislation and regulations. That is what the Dash 1 amendment is. This did not exist in 2005 and 2006 when that bill was passed. So the good intentions of that bill, which I admire because we had a horrible problem, is solved through this NPLEX situation. What I want to show you is that's just a screenshot of what a pharmacy would see or a police department would see if they downloaded the program. And let me just give you a quick overview of the program while you're looking at that screenshot. NPLEX is a public-private partnership offering a real-time electronic methamphetamine precursor tracking system free of charge to law enforcement, state governments, and pharmacists. The partners are the National Association of Drug Diversion Investigators. The manufacturer and the technology vendor is Apris. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. The cost to the state government is none. It's free. Law enforcement officers simply contact Apris and request the service. Upon verification, the officers receive a username and password and have access to the system. How does it work? The Federal Combat Methamphetamine Epidemic Act of 2005, CMEA, as well as numerous state and local laws, require retailers of products containing pseudoephedrine and ephedrine to capture customer data at the point of sale. That's what this does. Why is real time so important? It enables the blocking of sales, smurfing, as it's called. What about server, software, hardware? It's entirely web-based. There's no server needed, no software, no hardware. You just load it onto your computer right off the internet or just use the cloud-based version of it. There's blocked sales. All retailers in the system voluntarily block the sale of precursors that would exceed any law of jurisdiction, including 3.6 grams per day and 9 grams in 30 days, which, again, we've written into the bill. Here's the interesting thing. How many stores are using NPLEX? Over 20,000 retailers in the United States in 36 states are currently using it, including CVS, Rite Aid, Super Value, and stores here in Oregon. The second to last thing that I want to show you is this was purely by accident. In September, late September of this past year during the campaign season, there was a company that did some polling that was used for the governor's race, for the Secretary of State race, and the presidential race in Oregon. They were kind enough to allow me to have this question posed to a very, very, and you can find all the crosstabs and everything on OLIS. Here's the interesting thing. I didn't want this question asked over-the-counter. So think about this. People were asked, do you support over-the-counter purchase of pseudoephedrine products? You'll find, as it says, those 65 years and old, 65 younger than 65 years are the strongest supporters. They were asked, as you may know, Oregonians are required to obtain a doctor's prescription for products that contain the drug pseudoephedrine, which is commonly sold in cough and cold products, such as Sudafed. This was done to fight the methamphetamine epidemic that was ravaging Oregon at the time, and the law was implemented in 2006. Would you favor or oppose repealing this law and allowing Oregonians with proper identification to purchase these products over the counter without a doctor's prescription? And as you can see, 57% said they favor this. Those are Oregonians. Oregonians want their pseudoephedrine products back in a simpler way. So I conclude with this. This is a bill to help the quality of life for all Oregonians. And I especially point out, because of the cost, I have to go to my doctor, and depending on what your doctor charges, $75 to $125, to tell me that I have the sniffles, to write a prescription for me that I have to take down to. I go to Fred Meyer North and to get a product that costs more because it's a prescription now. When I just had a person email me this morning, I couldn't get it here in time, said they go up to Linwood, Washington, Costco, show their ID, which is exactly what I'm asking in this bill, and they got four packages of Sudafed for $1.50 a piece. So I ask you this. This is a tangible step that we can take to make health care more affordable. And that's what you guys do on a regular basis. But I thank you so much, members of this committee, and appreciate the time that you've given me.
Are there questions of this witness? We don't want to let them off easy.
No, please, it's your chance.
Representative Nose.
Two questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Are there limits on how much you can purchase under your bill or under this system?
Yeah, Chair Greenlick and Vice Chair Nose. Yes, it. You know what? I didn't bring the actual bill with me, but it is in there, and it's generally the accepted dosage of how many grams, which makes up a package. If you can remember back to before it was a prescription, those. Again, Sudafed. There are other products, but the Sudafed package was about yay big, and it had so many tablets in it. We went to what all the other states are doing and said, what is the amount you're doing, and we just wrote that into the bill. I don't have the exact language in front of me. I'm sorry.
Does not exceed 3.6 grams.
One other question.
Yes, go ahead.
So I understand from your testimony, you know, that the use of labs in our state was going down, and the product is being developed in other places and shipped in other ways, but isn't there some tangible benefit to the fact that we don't have these kind of, like, these labs are dangerous, right, you know, and people were living around them or children were growing up around them, and isn't that one of the sort of de facto benefits of the way that we've structured our requiring a prescription for this?
Absolutely, Chair Greenlick and Vice Chair Nose. Absolutely, and that's why I say it was such a good intention and we had a horrible problem going on. I think that I would go by the fact that if 36 other states are doing fine with the system that basically that I'm talking about doing, why wouldn't Oregon join with them? Mississippi being the only other state, frankly, I don't know that I want to be lumped in with Mississippi. It's not one of my favorite places to be lumped in with, but the surrounding states, people are going across the border to the other states to buy it. People are going across the border. Is it going to – did the bill end meth labs in Oregon? Pretty much. The law, the new law. But again, it was declining beforehand. The point, and that drug bust the other day, it was sort of a gift in a way because it showed the public what's really going on. People aren't crushing tablets of Sudafed anymore to make kind of half-baked methamphetamine. They're getting the good stuff, and it's cheaper, and it's better quality, and it's liquid Sudafedrine coming up from Mexico in barrels. And we're not stopping that. So I'd rather go after that and stop this plentiful, really good stuff that's coming across the board.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick. Thank you, Representative Post, for presenting it. In your proposed bill, what's the regulatory agency? Are you going to hand this off to the pharmacy to regulate and control it, the pharmacy board, or are you looking at doing kind of like they do with tobacco, with the OLCC? What's the regulatory body that you would recommend that this would be controlled under? You are having some controls, right?
Yes.
Behind the counter.
Yeah.
ID, tracking of quantities that is purchased in the computer system. So what's the regulatory body?
Yeah, let me add to that question. Who would be enforcing this?
And that's a great question, Chair Greenlick and Vice Chair Hayden. Again, you know, I probably should have had the bill in front of me because it's in there. It's in there. The NPLEX system would be downloaded by the pharmacist and so that's how it would be done. The pharmacy board, yeah. The idea being just like I don't know if I can read that small print.
You didn't do your favor.
Give him glasses, too.
Yeah, well, sure, it's in there.
It's the issue.
It is glasses.
It sucks to get old.
The issue is once it can be sold over the counter, who's going to determine?
No, it'll never be over the counter. Never be over the counter. We're talking behind the counter, yes. What it was 2 years before 2006. Actually, there's a doctor over there that I think knows better than I do.
Well, we've got some panels of folks warning against, so why don't we move on, let you off the hot seat, and call the panel that can talk to us about it.
Yeah, if you don't mind, well, I'll just say this. The idea behind this is to go where we were 2 years before this law was implemented, which is what you do in every other state. I frankly admit to it, because my wife has hay fever like crazy. Every time we go out of state, we go to whatever drugstore it is. You show your ID, you sign a form, they tap it into the NPLEX system. If I went, and then I get my two packages, if I go down the street to another pharmacist, they tap into the same NPLEX system and say, I'm sorry, Mr. Post, you just bought two packages at Rite Aid. We can't sell you any. So that's how it works. It's not over the counter, it's behind the counter. If that makes a difference. Thank you very much.
Let's listen to some other folks. Will you call the first panel, please?
Michael Holman, Steve Buckstein, Dennis Morgan.
It's always a pleasure to have you with us, Mr. Buckstein.
Do you want
some order?
All right. So, is this good?
That is good.
All right. Thank you, Chairman Greenlick and the representatives of the committee. My name is Mike Holman. I am a local pharmacist. I work in Salem and in surrounding areas for a local chain. I'm here to testify in favor of Representative Post and Representative Bueller's House Bill 2128. Representative Post and Mr. Buckstein are going to go over why we don't need this anymore, the scheduling anymore. I'm going to go more from a pharmacy perspective. First of all, the obvious, which has been mentioned, you need a prescription and the inconvenience of getting a prescription. And even though it's been available for 10 years, or the law's been in for 10 years, I still answer questions probably on a monthly basis of why isn't this available, mostly from people out of state, especially when graduation comes in and the parents are going, oh, I just discovered the Willamette Valley, and where's my Sudafed? You have to get a prescription. So unless you have a really good relationship with your doctor, you're going to have the cost of the doctor's visit, time off work, the cost to the healthcare system as far as insurance goes, and then the backlog. Another cost is that's going to be doubled probably, because the way you made it prescription is by making it a controlled substance. When you do that, you put on a restriction that the prescription only lasts 6 months from the date written rather than a full year. And you're also limited to 5 refills. So you're going to have to get, if you need pseudoephedrine year round, you need to bug your doctor twice a year rather than once a year. Top of that, you're going, because it is over the counter in most states of the union, a lot of insurances do not cover it. So even especially if you're getting something which is beyond regular pseudoephedrine, just plain, especially if you get like your Zyrtec D or Claritin D or any of their generic combos, those suckers are expensive and you're having to pay out of pocket, kind of like what if you went to Washington. So there's an added cost there. Also, by making it scheduled, there's extra requirements which may delay you getting the prescription. If the doctor doesn't have a DEA number, it's hard to find. We're going to have to take time to try and figure that out. That's usually not a huge problem, but the biggest problems would be like down in Corvallis or up in Portland where you have medical residents, and they don't have their own DEA number. They go by the institution's DEA, and then they tax some numbers on for personalization. And it's not easy to find unless their office is open. You can call and confirm it. You might be waiting another day if they bring the prescription in at 6 o'clock at night to confirm that. Let's see. You might be saying, aren't there other options over the counter? Yes, there are. But the oral version of phenylephrine, the Sudafed PE products, they're really heavily metabolized in our gut. And there's a lot of studies which just say they're no better than placebo. The intranasal stuff, like neosinephrine, Afrin, that can work great, but you can't use it more than 3 days in a row without a five-day break because you can get rebound congestion, and then you have a whole other problem to deal with. All the other options, like the antihistamines, your Flonase, your nasal corticosteroids, they can help with allergy symptoms, but as far as the nasal congestion pressure, it doesn't really kick in for immediately. Finally, I just want to remind the legislature that I think last biennium, you guys did a great step of making birth control available without a doctor's prescription to make it more readily available. You have the opportunity to do something on a similar scale, actually bigger, with pseudoephedrine, because you're not just dealing with a smaller population, which is heavily restricted by a protocol. You're hitting both sexes, all genders, who may be dealing with sinus congestion. And it's not going to be experimental. There's 48 other states out there which have maybe slight tweaks on how to do it. Washington, as Representative Post said, Washington has that program in which there's that stopgap, so we are preventing those from people from getting those prescriptions.
Representative Bueller, do you have
what's that?
Do you have a question?
No.
Oh
no.
Representative Hayden,
After or during the presentation, I would like a question to somebody from the pharmacy board or something on this.
We have somebody from the pharmacy board on our list.
I think Mr. Watt is in the room, yes.
Okay. We would ask him to join.
I'm just encouraging you to save Oregonians and the visitors time and money and save the healthcare system money and take this opportunity to pass the House Bill 2128. And thank you so much for your time. And may I ask, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them now or later.
Thank you. Mr. Buxton, are you next?
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Nose, Vice Chair Hayden, members of the committee, I'm Steve Buxton. I'm Senior Policy Analyst and founder of Cascade Policy Institute, a public policy research organization based in Portland. I'm here basically to say that HB 2128, I believe, is a common sense response to Oregon's overreach when we became the first state to require a prescription for pseudoephedrine drugs in 2006, as you heard. And also, as you heard, only Mississippi has followed our lead. Our law was meant to reduce the incidence of meth labs in the state, but federal data, and I know you'll hear later questioning the accuracy of this federal data, but it is federal data for all 50 states. Federal data show that by the time it went into effect, by the time our prescription drug law went into effect in mid-2006, the meth lab incidence had already dropped in Oregon by 89% in the previous 2 years. And this is just a little different way of looking at what Representative Post already showed you. Again, federal data for the Oregon, Washington, and California. Because the reason it dropped, I believe, by 89% in the previous 2 years was because Oregon did put pseudoephedrine drugs, quote-unquote, behind the counter, not in front of the counter, but behind the counter where you had to ask a pharmacist and show ID. Cascade Policy Institute wanted to see what was going on with this. So in 2012, we conducted a study of this data, and I think the stark reality is shown in Figure 1. As you've heard, Oregon reported 467 meth lab incidents in 2004, the year that we put it behind the counter, and just 50 by 2006, the year that it became a prescription drugs. By 2010, the last date of the data in our study, there were just 12 meth lab incidents reported in Oregon. And as you've heard, it's dropped into single digits since then. And again, our neighboring states showed similar declines. The top two lines showed similar percentage declines, and all they did was put the drug behind the counter. Neither of them required prescriptions, as Oregon required. But let's be clear. These laws, behind the counter and prescription, were not intended to reduce meth use or abuse. And I don't think they've done that. If anything, meth use and abuse, as you've heard, has probably gone up. I think the federal drug people say that this is the biggest drug problem that we have in Oregon and in many states. So it wasn't designed to reduce use and abuse. It was designed to reduce or hopefully eliminate homegrown meth labs, which, as Representative Nose pointed out, are very dangerous, both to the people living in the house, children, anybody else, and neighbors. I mean, you can literally, when you had 467 incidents in 1 year in Oregon, you were hearing it on the news all the time, and houses had to be condemned, basically. I mean, it just destroyed houses the way these things were being done. So it wasn't designed to reduce use and abuse. It was designed to reduce meth lab incidents, which over-the-counter has done a great job of doing all across the country. So requiring prescriptions, I believe, simply inconveniences Oregonians who want to treat minor cold and seasonal allergy symptoms, as pharmacist Mr. Holman mentioned a moment ago, something that people in 48 other states don't have to bother with. Oregonians have to make an appointment. We have to take time off work. We have to visit our doctor. We have to ask for a prescription twice a year because it's a controlled substance. So you can't just get it and say, well, maybe I'll get a cold in a year and I'll have the stuff. It doesn't work that way. Then you have to go to your pharmacist and get the prescription. Again, something that previous to our law, you simply asked the pharmacist, showed your proper ID. In this bill, you would have the controls so that you couldn't go shopping and go to 10 other pharmacies. You couldn't even go to one other pharmacy if you'd reached your limit. So this process, I believe, the way Oregon does it now, likely results in many of us relying on less effective treatments. As Mr. Holman pointed out, Sudafed PE, my pharmacist in Portland tells me, is just like a placebo. It really doesn't do much good. The real stuff, as a lot of people call it, is the pseudoephedrine drugs, the Sudafed, the Claritin D, that are by prescription only. So a lot of us either don't treat our colds or allergies, which results in more lost work time, less productivity for employers, and more cost for anybody that has to take time off work or go to a doctor for a prescription. I think it's just time to recognize that we solved not all, but virtually all of the meth lab problem in Oregon back in 2004 when we put it behind the counter, and then the federal law required all states to put it behind the counter in 2006. So I think it's time to repeal our prescription-only law in Oregon and let honest consumers do what consumers in 48 other states can do, which is buy the drugs that they feel are effective for their symptoms by going behind the counter without requiring a doctor's prescription. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buxton. Yes, please.
Good morning, Chair Greenwick and committee members. My name is Dennis Morgan. I'm from Lane County. I own an environmental laboratory testing facility, and I'm basically here testifying in favor of the bill to make my wife happy because my wife is a heavy sufferer of allergies.
It's important to make one's wife happy.
I agree with you, sir. In fact, she last year asked me to see if I could find somebody to push a bill like this through, and Representative Post in a meeting that I had with him last year said he was going to do one, so we kind of worked together. To answer a couple of questions that the committee asked, the bill does have the Board of Pharmacy as the regulatory group for this bill, and it's a 14-day supply that is allowed legally under the package, which is normally a normal size. Everybody else has been very eloquent in covering many of the points that I want to point out. In an effort to keep my wife happy, and I travel a lot in my business, I go to California and in Washington, so I generally buy Claritin D for my wife up there. It was interesting for several years in California. I could go from store to store and buy Claritin D, and then they voluntarily got on the NELAC system, and I was rather surprised in a two-week period of time from one time when I was down there for a business trip to the next time. It stopped immediately, in buying the system. So this, I will tell you, the system works very well in terms of stopping the second sale coming through. Recently, I was up in Washington and on business, and so I bought some Claritin D for my wife and bought it at Costco up in Bellingham and spoke to them up there. And two-week supply was $31 up there plus sales tax. Came down here to Costco in Eugene, and if she had a prescription, it would be $39 for the same two-week supply. So there is a cost differential, as people have testified to, that it's more expensive to buy prescription drugs. And then the cost of going to a doctor to get a prescription, which for whatever reason my wife refuses to or forgets to bring up when she goes there. So I'm in favor of the bill. You'll see a lot of testimony that a number of home labs has dropped tremendously over the last decade. I think the original bill was well-intended. We didn't have the national database system at the time. I do believe if the national database system was in place at the time of the original bill, Oregon probably would have gone that route, but you went down the route they did. I think we have a better system, not a better system, or it's an easier system and more sympathetic to the people in Oregon who suffer from allergies. Thank you.
I would say making one's wife happy is the strongest argument I've heard for this bill so far.
I'm sure Harriet would agree with you.
Are there any questions to this panel? Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Would you call the next panel, please?
The last panel, Mr. Chair, is Rob Bovet and Meredith Bliss.
We also ask the pharmacy board to join us while we're at it.
Good. Okay. Mr. Watt?
You gotta be careful where you lurk.
I'm finding that out.
Please.
Chair Greenlake, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Ovett, legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties, but here today representing a broad coalition of health associations, law enforcement associations, child welfare associations, in opposition to this bill. And let me see if I can explain. I'm kind of their designated representative for the day, and I'll try to hopefully pull it off. I should explain that I am the author of Oregon's 2001, 2003, and 2005 pseudoephedrine controls, so I have quite a bit of a background on this, both here in the state and nationally. As there are points of agreement, I can agree that most of the meth that is used in Oregon is, in fact, from Mexico, has been, even when we had 500, 600 lab incidents a year. That was always the case. But here's what we did and why we took the action in 2005 that we did. We looked at our 2003 laws. We were tracking. We didn't have a centralized database, but we were tracking, and we found a big hole. We found a big hole that exists today in the NPLEX system, and it's something called smurfing. And I should probably just stop there and say smurfing, 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 smurfing. This is a good reason why you should not pass this bill, but I need to explain smurfing. We actually took the chair and vice chair of then the Senate Judiciary Committee and the House Judiciary Committee, and I took them smurfing down Commercial Street. Smurfing basically just means you get a lot of different people that purchase the lawful limit. And they sell it on the spot local black market that gets to the meth cooks, and you get local meth labs. So now I may disagree with the data that you've seen, and I can show you different data that shows different meth lab trends, particularly in the state of Washington, but that's kind of beside the point. The point is that we can look to different states that have the NPLEX system and see what's going on. The biggest hydraulic that is really super important for you to understand that we do not control is the quality and quantity of meth on our streets. That is controlled by factors that are out of our reach. Right now in the West Coast, tragically, meth is super pure, super potent, and dirt cheap. I call them the four P's. There's four variables that affect methamphetamine and its availability and, frankly, the epidemic. It's price, potency, poundage, and purity. They're four distinct things, and they can go up and down. Right now, all four of those are terrible for addiction, but on the flip side, they are good for not having meth labs, because if meth is super potent, super cheap, and readily available, there's no reason to cook your own. It costs you more, and you take great risks. But reversing this bill means that when those hydraulics change, which history has proven time and time again they will, we will get a resurgence of local toxic meth labs because of smurfing. How do I know this? All we have to do is look at a couple of NPLEX states in a region of the United States where the hydraulics are different right now. Last year, Indiana, who has the NPLEX system on steroids, I would say, had 983 meth lab incidents. That's not a sign of success. In Ohio, they pulled over 100 children out of meth labs last year. That's an NPLEX state. So if you passed this bill, would we see an immediate resurgence in local toxic meth labs? Maybe not. It would depend upon hydraulics, which, guess what, we can't control. As the representative correctly testified, a lot of the meth, it's actually not liquid pseudoephedrine, a lot of the meth that's being brought into America is being brought in liquid form, and they just simply recrystallize it, essentially. And that's one of the methods of smuggling. There's a lot of methods of smuggling. But we proved, why did we take that action in 2005? We looked at what we had done with behind the counter. We looked at what we'd done with tracking, and we still had 50, 60 meth lab incidents a year, and we said, why are we having those? And the answer was smurfing, which is exactly what our leadership proved in 2005 when they, in fact, did smurfing over the course of 15 minutes up and down Commercial Street. They purchased enough pseudoephedrine for me to make about 140 hits of meth for them. So this is what we would return to, and it's not a matter of if, it's only a matter of when. And for the folks that I represent, this is not, and I'm not tone deaf to the arguments here on both sides, but this is really a matter of health, safety, and life and death for drug-endangered children, for law enforcement officers. And it's a big financial hit to property owners and devastation on our environment. We don't want to return there. So that's the core of what I'd have to say. I can certainly show you a chart. In fact, maybe can we put up a chart just to clarify? I just need to clarify one thing. It's be Robovet. I think it's like two graphs or something like that, if that's possible. You don't have it? Okay, it's on Olds. The bottom line is that you've seen comparative data, all these charts. Oh, well, it's here. Comparative chart showing Washington going down with Oregon. You really can't compare fairly Oregon with Washington, because in Oregon we're centralized and we report everything to the El Paso Intelligence Center of the DEA. In Washington they don't. You actually have to get their correct meth lab data from their Department of Ecology, because they're not centralized. So they're off by an order of magnitude in terms of their numbers. So I would just caution you about looking at numbers. Am I arguing that Washington is full of meth labs right now? No, because they're operating under the same hydraulics that we are currently. There isn't really a whole lot of reason for people to make their own meth right now, today, on the West Coast. But that will change. It's just a matter of time. And when it does change, if we are not protected by our prescription-only requirement, we will experience a resurgence in meth labs, and we'll look just like Indiana looks today.
Thanks, Rob. Yes, sir.
Chair Green, like members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify here. My name is Meredith Bliss. I'm not going to repeat the testimony that I provided to you in written form. I do want to add that I'm currently the chair of the Forest Grove, City of Forest Grove Budget Committee, and a former city councilor, and I'm not representing the views of the city either. But I did want to be able to provide you a local perspective on how NPLEX might function in local law enforcement agencies. I've personally used several similar databases, and I can assure you that it is not an easy job to find people of interest in systems like this. Even if you have the resources, such as my own training as a crime analyst, to filter through these databases, it's not without expense to the local agency. There's training time involved. The drug companies may pay for the training, but they don't pay for your time off to go to the training sessions. And still, there's a lot of time involved for investigators to filter through this information. Oftentimes, they experience in other states shows that they tend not to use this kind of information. They rely on traffic stops or things of that nature. So be careful with that. And as I understand the -1 amendments, that would make NPLEX totally useless to local law enforcement in the state of Oregon as well. And that's basically all that I really need to say today. Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have any comments, or are you just available for questions?
I'm just available for questions. I have to apologize. I was emailing when I heard Board of Pharmacy. I didn't hear the preceding 30 seconds. So if you do have any questions, I'm available.
Representative Bueller?
Yeah, thank you.
He needs to
say his name.
Oh. Thank you, Chair Greenleck.
I'm the my name is Marcus Watt. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Pharmacy.
Mr. Bovet, do you have any familiarity with the PDMP, the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bueller, indeed, I was one of the co-authors of that original legislation and worked on that to improve that consistently since then.
Do you know that pharmacists in this state can write prescriptions and to enter that data into the PDMP?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bueller, indeed. And if we were going to go down any road, that'd be the road I'd want to talk about. I mean, the reality is that the Dash 1 amendments, which is the NPLEX bill, the way they're written, it would be the worst of both worlds. We would have a tracking system that the GAO study says doesn't reduce meth labs, and it would be inaccessible to law enforcement. So it would be just, I mean, it would move Oregon from being one of the top two states that's anti-meth lab to...
Yeah, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about PDMP.
PDMP, right.
Yep. Another question, please.
One
more question.
Go ahead.
So why do you think a doctor or healthcare provider many times responding through a designee over the phone is any better than preventing smurfing them, a pharmacist in person writing a prescription?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Bueller, that's really not the bill before you at the moment, but I understand your question. Like I say, I think we could maybe have a conversation around whether or not we can go there. There's a stark difference between smurfing and a prescription, whether it's issued by a doctor or a pharmacist. I think that would put pharmacists potentially back in the crosshairs again, as they were prior to 2005, with smurfers having to deal with them across the counter. And I'm not really sure how that would play out. I know it would be a heck of a lot better than what you've got in front of you.
Well, I offered many times to talk to you and the organizations about this kind of modification to the bill with no response. So I'm more than willing to have that kind of conversation to make this workable.
Chair Greenlee, Representative Bueller, you may have contacted some folks, but I don't recall a contact from you on this topic.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Greenlee. As becoming part of the legislature, I have learned that we have the opportunity to weigh in on a lot of medical issues, pharmacy issues, which some of us look at as a positive thing and some of us look at with some concern of basically practicing medicine from the legislature. So that is a fact that happens here. My question is, we're also working on a concept, and hopefully it isn't an unfair question, working on a concept of a pharmacy advisory board that would work with the pharmacy board to tackle issues that come up as perhaps hydraulics of an issue changes, goes up or goes down, which would give a pathway for the pharmacy board, the medical association to work together to make some of these decisions. Is this type of a decision-making process something that would be encompassed in that concept that we're working on of a pharmacy advisory board, working with the pharmacy board, working with the medical association? If there are hydraulics of an increase or a decrease of supply coming from Mexico, it's really hard for us in the legislature to take all that scientific data and put it into something and create a law out of it. Would it be easier for you folks, or would it get more accurate if you had knowledgeable people looking at these studies? There is compelling studies presented here today, pro, and compelling arguments against. Is the idea of the pharmacy advisory board to be able to step in and really weigh the evidence and present what is the best outcome protecting the most Oregonians?
Vice Chair, Chair Hayden and Chair Greenlick, I believe it is. I think this is a perfect example of how that concept would work very, very well in that you'd be able to increase access and yet still maintain controls over the process and the availability of the pseudoephedrine and therefore reduce the laboratories. So I see that as a very excellent example of how that other process you just described would work.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if one of the witnesses could explain smurfing again one more time, because I think that's the piece that I'm struggling with here. I thought it felt, I was kind of moving one way at the beginning of this, and now I'm questioning that again. So if you could just explain that one more time.
I'm sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Nose, smurfing is just a term that is used in the law enforcement community to describe, well, let's just say, you all had various reasons for wanting to double the $10 you have in your pocket to $20. Maybe you're an addict. Maybe you're just wanting to double it. Maybe you're a college kid. You just go buy $10 worth of pseudoephedrine, sell it into the spot market, double it, and create a supply of local pseudoephedrine for meth cooks. That's smurfing, because you're buying what you lawfully can buy. It's just you're not really buying it for you. You're buying it to sell into the spot market. And that's what creates 983 meth lab incidents in Indiana last year. It's all smurfing, because the NPLEX system can't and doesn't stop or preclude that from occurring. And that's what we discovered in 2004 in Oregon when we looked at our tracking system.
Follow-up question. So it's a little bit like, to use the college student example, like when you go and sell plasma or something like that, right? It's a little bit, it's a kind of the equivalent of that, just so I'm understanding this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Noss, yes. I mean, I don't want to characterize the motivations of all smurfers. It can be a mix. It could be people that are homeless. It could be people that are struggling with their own addiction. It could be their heroin addict. It could be whatever reason is motivating that that desire to double.
It's a way you consolidate the amount you need by getting a lot of people to buy.
It just seems like a lot to orchestrate, but maybe that happens.
It's well,
I'm going to close this hearing. Thank you guys for being with us. Close the hearing on House Bill 2128 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2518. What do we have, Madam Administrator?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2518 comes to you at the request of Representative Bueller. It requires a pharmacy to report de-identified information to the Prescription Monitoring Drug Program upon dispensing prescribed naloxone, requires the pharmacy to report certain other identifying information to the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program upon dispensing prescribed controlled substance classified in Schedule 2 to 4. And, the panel is before us. We have Representative Bueller, Courtney Dresser, and Katrina Hedberg.
Is that not all?
No, we will have one more individual after that.
Who is that?
Bill Cross.
Representative Bueller, go for it.
Brother. Thank you, Chair Greenlick. For the record, my name is Representative Newt Bueller. I represent House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend. I'm just going to briefly set the context, and then I'm going to let the experts to the right and left of me go through the details of the bill. And first of all, I'd like to thank both my colleagues for their hard work on this topic specifically, and then more generally with regards to the opioid crisis that we're facing in this state. It really is the biggest man-made epidemic in the history of this country, and we've got to get it under control. And I frequently, and I thank this committee for taking on this issue. We've done some really good work over the last 4 years. And you know from my past comments that I have talked about bringing this out of the shadows, because all too often no one wants to talk about this. You don't want to talk about a loved one or a family member or a child who has a heroin or opioid addiction. It's a really hard thing to deal with. And instead of kind of going through all the data and the information, I just want to read you an email I received the other day. And once I started talking out about this topic, this example of bringing it out of the shadows really became clear to me, because I had two close friends who had kids addicted to heroin, and I didn't even know about it until I started talking about it. And as you can imagine, it takes a lot of courage to speak out about something like that. But one of my friends is now willing to talk about it for the first time. And I'm going to read the email. And this email comes from Carol and Les Stiles, who are good friends of mine. And some of you may recognize that name because Les Stiles was former sheriff of Deschutes County. Dear Representative Bueller, our daughter died on July 6, 2011, at the age of 36 from a heroin and opioid overdose. She left behind a 9-year-old son whom she deeply loved and whose greatest wish was to have his mother be healthy so that they could live together again. The devastating loss of this little boy's mother has permanently altered his life. Kristen had many struggles as a teen and young adult, ultimately finding opioids as her preference. The tipping point that secured her fate, we believe, was returning to Bend when her son was 2 years old with a serious and painful medical condition of her own. We secured health care for her, and she found a physician who had worked with her to get the surgery she so badly needed. Unfortunately, the physician who gave Kristen higher and higher doses of medications that she had never taken before, including methadone, when queried about addiction risk of all these meds, the physician stated, "Don't worry, I'll help you after the surgery." Kristen had the surgery. The physician left town to practice elsewhere, and we are faced with a badly addicted daughter unable to manage her life and her cravings. The drugs worked magic on her brain and convinced her that she did not need treatment. She lost everything and struggled to find opioids from whoever would prescribe them. Frequent trips to the ER filled the gaps when she needed more. She overdosed at least 3 times, with 2 trips to the ER and the ICU. The overdose that claimed our precious child found her alone in her apartment, dying for 2 days before she was discovered. It was, of course, too late for her to come back. We are grateful to you and the House Healthcare Committee for bringing attention to this crisis, this tearing so many lives and families apart. And we support your efforts to bring attention to the opioid epidemic and find solutions to save others from the terrible loss we've experienced. So many lives have been destroyed, and now is the time to say enough is enough. Thank you very much.
Chair Greenlick, vice chairs and members of the committee, my name is Courtney Dresser. I'm with the Oregon Medical Association, and we've been working with different coalition partners on bringing you House Bill 2518. 2518 would allow our frontline doctors and our emergency departments and primary care offices to quickly and understand the prescription drugs that their patients may be on. We have a great tool in Oregon called the Oregon Prescription Database Monitoring Program, or the PDMP. Last year, we did some good work to enhance the information and make that available to our emergency doctors and to some of our primary care doctors by integrating that with different health IT systems. This year, we're looking at more enhancements to make that a better tool and a faster tool for our providers. HB 2518 with the -1 amendments would autonomize the PDMP by streamlining the registration with the board licensure process. It would grant medical directors opportunity to look at the information for quality assurance. It would encourage some interoperability between states, and it would add naloxone to the monitored prescriptions that would be part of the PDMP database. The -1s, which are on OLIS, remove a couple things. First of all, part of the 2518 included adding the last 4 digits of a Social Security number of the patient, and we're encouraging the -1s to remove the last 4 digits of patient's Social Security number being included in the PDMP. I think that's a little too much, and the DOJ has advised that we shouldn't be doing that. Patients may also, in the -1, request that the OHA remove errors in their PDMP record, so patients can have a little more control of what is in that record. Currently, OHA may release de-identified PDMP information for research purposes and public health purposes. The dashed ones clarify how those entities can enter into data use agreements with our state. So we also received word from this morning in a text message from ACLU that they are supportive of 2518 with the dash one amendments. They had planned to be here, but they couldn't be here today.
Naloxone is entered into the PDMP?
It would be.
And it will be available for somebody to look at, not the identified, in its internal use.
Correct. We at the OMA and our partners would encourage you to support 2518 with the dash one amendments and help us to continue to fight this epidemic with a very good tool that we have available to us, and we should be using it. Thank you.
You're getting to be a familiar face here.
So, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg. I'm the state health officer with the Public Health Division, and I'm here to provide information about the opioid overdose epidemic that we're seeing, as well as the prescription drug monitoring program, which we oversee in the Public Health Division. Right. So I think as I've testified for you all before, we are seeing an epidemic of opioid overdose. Currently, it looks like we've sort of started to level off with overdose deaths, but we're still three times the number of deaths than we were in 2000. So we haven't, while it appears to be leveling off, we haven't quite, I won't say we've achieved success yet. People are still getting an awful lot of prescription for opioids. Approximately every year, there are 7 million controlled prescriptions written in the state of Oregon, so that's almost two for every man, woman, and child in the state. And there's a variety of strategies that we need to use to address this. So clearly, one of these strategies, as I've mentioned before, is to limit the amount of prescriptions that we have in circulation, and there are a variety of strategies for that, including things like our prescription guidelines, as well as some proposed efforts around drug take-back, et cetera. The second piece is naloxone for folks who have overdosed as a rescue, and then, of course, the third is medication-assisted treatment. The PDMP is really a very useful tool to help with the first part of that, prescribing for controlled substances in our state. Currently, or in 2016, we had over 9,000 prescribers who were using the PDMP or looked into it for over 1.2 million queries. So people are using the PDMP. I will say that Oregon was one of the last states in the country to pass PDMP legislation, I think it's a very important tool. And I will say that one of the things for waiting that long is that we can actually learn from other states. The Brandeis University has a Center for Excellence around PDMPs and puts a number of things in that this current legislation would help Oregon to address. So the PDMP, for example, will allow information from medical directors and pharmacy directors who are helping to oversee staff to ensure, it's quality improvement, ensuring patient safety and health. So that is part of it. What's happening in that clinical setting? It also authorizes interstate data sharing, again, so we make sure that there are folks who potentially are getting prescriptions in a couple of states to have those data, but within some very clear guidelines. So it's not that these data get shared, but within some very strict guidelines. But again, that's important for example, the Portland metro area and Washington State, et cetera, that we have cross-border. Collecting method of payment within the PDMP would also help to identify potentially dangerous prescribing practices. Because, for example, when people are filling with paying for insurance, that's different than if people are having cash purposes. I will say that the naloxone bill and having that being available now behind the counter, but being by prescription by pharmacists is a very has been important to increasing access for naloxone throughout the state, and allowing naloxone to be tracked within the PDMP would help us to evaluate the effectiveness of that system. So those are elements of the bill that we feel would help strengthen the PDMP. And again, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions, Ms. Bell? Thank you very much.
Okay.
And one more witness to call.
Thank
Bill
you.
Cross, please. I'll announce while we're bringing Mr. Cross up that we're going to reschedule House Bill 2340 for a week from today, the 17th of March. A little mix up with the paperwork.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon State Pharmacy Association and the Oregon Society of Health System Pharmacists. And we, unfortunately, were not involved in some of the earlier discussions about this specific legislation and the Dash 1 amendments. So I am just looking at the Dash 1 amendments now and would like to share them, obviously, with the pharmacists. For some of you newer to the legislature, the pharmacists were very involved in the initial development of the PDMP and have been very supportive of the PDMP and would want to address this issue. The problem will be the costs that to add new features, new fields, to collect and transfer, transfer the data to the PDMP on non-scheduled drugs like the naloxone, and it was unclear to us whether that's to be identified with the patient or de-identified. Adding things like the Social Security numbers, which now look like they'll be taken out, which is good, but method of payment, those are all additional IT issues that we just simply haven't had a chance to explore and to identify what the costs, might be and how easy it would be to make those kinds of changes in our systems. So I would look forward to working with the sponsor and stakeholders that have been involved in the development of this legislation, but we do have some concerns.
And you'll get back to us on that?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Cross.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2518. If there's anything else to be brought before the committee, the minister?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for being here so bright and early. We're adjourned. Right and early.